Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. We are coming to you live from the Green Space today with a Climate Week special. Now, for those of you here in the theater, you will soon see a basket of stuff that we will have on stage with us. That's because later in the show, we will invite you all to play Is It Recyclable or Is It Not? With a special guest from the Lower East Side Ecology Center, which offers various kinds of recycling services in the city. Green Space audience, get ready to look over these items later when the time comes and take your best guess. Is it recyclable or is it not? And listeners, you'll be able to play along at home too. We'll tell you how when the time comes. And in fact, listeners, you can watch the whole show if you would like to, because we stream live video when we're in the Green Space. So you can go to the Green Space website or the WNYC website, go to the Brian Lehrer Show page or our Twitter feed or our Facebook feed or WNYC's Facebook page. Any of those will get you to the link for the live video stream if you want to see us here in the Green Space this morning. Just to locate us in the real political world that we're living in this morning, here are two environmental things the Trump administration did yesterday. They prohibited California from issuing emission standards for cars and trucks that are stronger than the federal standards. California wants miles per gallon to be in the 50s under state law. Trump says no, it must remain in the 30s, which is the federal standard. But then Trump did say he would order the EPA to cite the city of San Francisco as violating federal environmental laws because San Francisco has a big population of homeless people. So it's homeless people as illegal sources of pollution, cars and trucks, not so much, according to the president, who has called methane freedom gas. So welcome to fall 2019, everybody, and welcome to the Green Space. So tomorrow, there will be a nationwide student strike and school walkout to call for meaningful action on climate change. And we are lucky enough to have two youth leaders of that action with us as our first guest today. One of them you might have seen on television before, because Vic Barrett got to ask a question of Andrew Yang in the CNN Climate Change Forum for the Democratic presidential hopefuls the other week. In fact, let's listen to the beginning of that exchange to set this up.
Do you agree that the President of the United States has the constitutional obligation to end federal government support and promotion of a fossil fuel energy system, considering it endangers all citizens, especially young people like myself and future generations?
As I just stated, I would end all fossil fuel subsidies, and I'm going to take it a step further. I proposed a constitutional amendment that makes it the responsibility of the United States government to safeguard and protect our environment for future generations.
And it went on from there. And we're told that Vic Barrett, ironically, is stuck in traffic on his way to the Green Space and should be here any second. So we're going to ask him about his own contribution to breaking car culture when he gets here. But we will meet Vic in just a second. Also with us, Jade Lozada, age 17, a senior at the High School of American Studies at Lehman College in the Bronx. She is the arts coordinator for tomorrow's student climate strike and a member of the core committee of the group Fridays for Future, which argues for students to replace school every Friday with positive political action. And also here on the Green Space stage from WNYC and Gothamist, we have Clarissa Diaz, interaction and graphic designer for our data news team. Clarissa has a great and visual story out today on Gothamist called, Guess What? Your Plastics Aren't Really Getting Recycled. Well, some are, some aren't, as we will hear. Good morning, Jade. Good morning, Clarissa.
Good morning.
Clarissa, in fact, why don't I start with you? And I recommend everybody to everybody go to the Gothamist page to see this wonderful piece of visual journalism that you have up. Can you describe what you've produced?
Yeah. So Judith Ng, who I think you've had on the show, and she'll be on tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, so she had a kind of a plastics convening for reporters up in Bennington, where she's working on her organization, Beyond Plastics. And so she invited me to come up and learn more about it. And I just, you know, I became interested in the topic and came back to New York and, you know, tried to see what was going on in the city in terms of, you know, just asking the simple question, what happens when we put our plastics into the recycling bin and where does it end up? And from there ended up into almost a kind of an investigation into where our recyclables are going and created this visual.
And one of your stats is that 91% of the plastics ever produced have not been recycled. So does that kind of show as a lie the idea that just because something could conceivably be recycled, industry is, you know, misleading us by saying therefore it's okay to produce en masse?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a worldwide statistic that is kind of the scientific consensus on how much plastic hasn't been recycled. And I think the thing is that when you think about recycling, you know, normally you think when you recycle something, you return it back to what it was to create the same thing. So, but in the case of plastics, we don't really see that happening. We see that the plastics are getting recycled and kind of downcycled, if you will, you know, into things like thinner plastics, like plastic bags and, you know, decking material. Even our clothing has plastic fibers in it, backpacks. Some things that we don't even think about, and this kind of like shocked me as I learned more about it. Like the more I realized, how many things around me were actually made out of plastic.
In fact, one of the things that I learned from your article this morning is that when we recycle plastic bottles, for example, and other things that we might think of as hard or hard-ish plastic, sometimes it doesn't result in other bottles. It actually winds up in our clothing.
Right. Yeah.
So that's really, really interesting. And as you note in your piece, India and China have now banned importing plastic waste.
Yes.
Do you know the background of this? Like, why did the two biggest countries on Earth by population take in so much plastic from this country in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't just the U.S. It was also, like, the West in general, Europe as well, and the U.K. But, you know, for decades, really, they were taking in our exports. And then it's called the National Sword Policy that happened, that China banned these plastics coming in anymore. And part of the reason was, one is that, you know, they were receiving these kind of, you know, truckloads and boatloads of plastic waste, but all of it was contaminated. It was not pre-sorted. They had to go to kind of sort through it. They were kind of just buying it, and we were just kind of just sending it over to them as, like, you know, in its original state of trash. So it was a lot. It was too much for them to manage. You know, now that we just keep producing plastic, and we kind of out of sight, out of mind, you know, export it. I think we don't really, like, see how much plastic waste we've actually created, but it's become overwhelming, I think, for these countries, and they simply can't keep up with it anymore.
Yeah, and you mentioned the sorting that they have to do. Later in the show, when we play Is It Recyclable or Is It Not, our expert guest from the Lower East Side Ecology Center will talk about sorting. I think New York City is fairly good at it, but I know Judith Ng, the recycling expert and plastics expert, who you mentioned and who's coming back on the show tomorrow, is very big on being aware of good intentions that go bad when we put a lot of stuff into our recycling bins. Like, oh, this looks like hard plastic that could be recycled. I'm going to throw it right in there with everything else. Mm-hmm. But really, if it's not recyclable, then it pollutes the recycling stream. And that's one of the reasons, as I understand it, that China in particular has stopped taking our stuff.
Yeah, and in a way, it's not necessarily a bad thing that they're banning it now, because it will kind of force us to kind of deal with our own waste and kind of see it for ourselves. So, yeah.
Also joining us now, Vic Barrett, age 20, from White Plains, a fellow with the Alliance for Climate Education and a plaintiff in the generational lawsuit that you may know about, called Juliana versus the United States, which argues in federal court that the whole next generation of Americans risks losing their, quote, rights to life, liberty, property, and public trust resources by federal government acts that knowingly destroy, endanger, and impair the unalienable climate system that nature endows. That's language from the lawsuit. And to be fair, that lawsuit was filed during the Obama administration, but it's having its day in court under Trump. So hi, Vic. Welcome to Green Space.
Hi. Thank you. Sorry for being late.
Somebody told me you got stuck in traffic. Were you in an actual car?
Yeah.
So breaking car culture a day at a time, right? And again, with us too is Jade Lozada, age 17, a senior at the High School of American Studies at Lehman College in the Bronx and arts coordinator for tomorrow's student climate strike. And Clarissa Diaz from Gotham is still here too. So Vic, before you came in, we played the beginning of, well, we played your question to Andrew Yang in the CNN Climate Forum and the beginning of his answer. What did he say in sum, and how satisfied were you with his answer?
Yeah, I was surprised by his answer for sure. he responded that he thinks the Constitution should have a Green Amendment protecting the rights of nature and protecting the rights of people in terms of climate change. I mean, I was surprised by the answer, and I thought it was definitely a really kind of radical answer for a presidential candidate to have. But for me, I believe that my rights to have a stable climate are already afforded to me in the Constitution, and there doesn't need to be an amendment for that to happen. It says right in the Constitution that we have the right to life, liberty, and property. And climate change risk puts all of that at risk. So I feel like it's something that's already spoken to in the Constitution.
Yeah, and part of the Trump administration's response to the lawsuit is that there just is no right in the Constitution to a sustainable climate. I was shocked when I read that language. Like, this is a defense. we're going to go ahead and destroy the earth because the Constitution doesn't force us not to.
Yeah, the Trump administration has been taking really incredible legal measures in order to avoid the case, filing a lot of writ of mandamuses, which are basically just saying that the government will be harmed if they have to answer to the lawsuit, which is a really ridiculous legal tactic that isn't used very frequently. But we see that the Trump administration, not even in this case, but in a lot of immigration cases, has been totally abusing the judicial system.
Jade, before we talk about the climate strike tomorrow, can you tell everyone about the larger movement that you're involved with called Fridays for Future?
Absolutely. So Fridays for Future was started by Greta Thunberg in December of 2018. She was only 15 at the time, and she went outside Swedish Parliament and started striking every Friday against government inaction on climate change. It's just grown into this international movement. We're now all over the world. We have students going outside their own national legislatures, and in New York, it's the UN, and we stay there and say, we need action now. We need you to listen to us now.
And the website for Fridays for Future says, Greta requests that people strike in front of their closest town hall every Friday. So is the idea to not go to school on Fridays at all anymore and devote the day instead to political action?
We don't expect every single person to go on strike on Fridays, but definitely the point is that our education has no value if we are not given the opportunity as adults to use it. We are required by our governments to go to school, to learn. But what happens when we're adults and we're in a world where there's such a bigger problem on our hands that everything we learned is just useless? What we need is action now that will address our futures the way we need them to be addressed.
Now, listeners, if you saw Vic Barrett ask a question on TV, now you can ask him a question on the radio or ask a question of any of our guests, 212-433-WNYC. Anybody listening who plans to participate in the climate strike tomorrow, if you're a student or a faculty member or anyone else, or anyone may call 212-433-WNYC 433-9692. And audience here in the green space, just raise your hands and we'll come around with microphones. You mentioned Greta Thunberg, who of course a lot of people know now as this teenage climate activist from Sweden. She's in the US right now. As again, many of our listeners know, she will help lead a youth climate action summit next week. I understand simultaneous to the UN Climate Action Summit. Greta got to testify before Congress yesterday and chose to speak for only a minute as her statement. Here it is.
My name is Greta Thunberg. I have not come to offer any prepared remarks at this hearing. I am instead attaching my testimony. It is the IPCC Special Report on Global Warming of 1.5 degrees Celsius, the SR 1.5, which was released on October 8, 2018. I am submitting this report as my testimony because I don't want you to listen to me. I want you to listen to the scientists. And I want you to unite behind the science. And then I want you to take real action. Thank you.
Don't listen to me, listen to the scientists. And she just offered the recent report from the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change as her testimony. Very smart. Vic, I gather you know Greta Thunberg, yes?
Yeah.
Yes, what kind of contact have you had with her?
Well, I testified on that panel with her yesterday and also spoke at a press conference with her yesterday. I met her at COP24 in Poland, actually, originally. And then we got to reconnect at this event with The Intercept and Naomi Klein, where we talked about our visions of the future. And she's an amazing young activist and incredibly humble. When I approached her, before I even got to tell her all the reasons that she inspired me, she's like, I've been watching the lawsuit for a while. Everyone in the United States is doing great work. Even this last week, we've been in DC together with a lot of other young activists from the United States in meetings with members of Congress. And she's been really adamant that she doesn't want all the attention and that she does want to step back because from a lot of the attention and put a lot of the power in the United States activist hands. Especially, we were in a meeting with Speaker Pelosi, and the speaker kept asking Greta, like, do you have anything to add? Do you have anything to add? And Greta just, no.
Was she like, no, I refer you to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report?
Well, no, she just encouraged her to listen to the youth in the room that were living in the United States, and that had more knowledge about the political and climate issues in the United States, and has just been really interested in uplifting the voices of youth activists on the ground here.
And what did you say if you were in that testimony too? Were you asked questions?
Yes, I was. I spoke to the health impacts of climate change, so I spoke about anxiety and depression and how a lot of young people are just constantly waking up every morning and going to bed every night knowing that the weight of the climate crisis is on their shoulders in so many ways. And I spoke to wanting to fight for future generations to not have to sacrifice so much of their lives to be activists. And yeah, we got a lot of interesting questions from some of the people on the panel. Some GOP congressmen that were a little aggressive at times, but also a lot of support from people.
You got a story to tell at all about aggression and how you dealt with it?
They just asked a lot of, the politicians do this weird thing where like they have 5 minutes to ask a question, which like seems a little weird, right? So it's like—
To ask all their questions, they get a 5 minute block to interview a witness, and
yeah,
then they go on to the next congressperson for 5 minutes, et cetera, mm-hmm, right?
Yeah, so basically they get to just like talk for 4 minutes and then, you know, like add the question to the end. But yeah, we got a lot of questions about, well, if the United States isn't the largest emitter right now, why should we be the people to have to take the brunt of dealing with the climate crisis and things like that?
Did you have an answer for that?
Yeah, I just said that the United States has 25% of historic emissions, and even if we're not the largest emitter in the world right now, we're the second largest emitter with only having 3% of the world's population.
And so, Jade, what's happening tomorrow in the student climate strike? What should we expect around this area and around the country or the world?
Tomorrow at 12 p.m., students from all over New York City and some other states near us are going to strike at Foley Square. We're having speakers that day, and then we're going to walk to Battery Park, go around the Bull, around the Stock Exchange, and meet at Battery Park where Greta is speaking. But it's an intergenerational strike. Everyone is welcome to join us. This movement is youth-led, but ultimately the climate crisis affects us all, and we want representation of everyone there.
I think we have a question in the green space. Who had their hand up? There you go. Hi.
This is addressed to the younger folks here. There are credible experts out on the web. If you do the search term near-term extinction, there are people who, with some credentials, who think that it's hopeless and that we're doomed and there's not much we can do. Now, I'm not that pessimistic. I would say the odds of that, let's say the odds are 100-1, that's real, okay? I would bet any insurance underwriter, if you give him those odds and the stakes, all of life on Earth, would say it's worth it to spend $100 trillion over the next 10 years stopping all global emissions of greenhouse gases, and $500 trillion over the next 100 years reversing and repairing the damage we've done. I think that's the kind of vision that I would love to see you folks put out there. And if we manage to instill that vision and those values into not just America, but the whole planet, we can transform life, the economy, politics, and culture globally. That's what I believe is really needed. I'd love your response to that.
By the way, I think I recognize your voice. Did you call us from a bus yesterday?
No.
That wasn't me. Okay,
no.
You sound. Was that you? Yeah. Why don't you talk next? Give him the microphone. For people who were listening yesterday, when we were talking about breaking car culture in New York, I had no idea you were going to be here. So that's hilarious. I just misrecognized him as you. So if you heard yesterday's show, we were talking about breaking car culture here in New York with City Council Speaker Cory Johnson, who uses that term. And we had a caller from Brooklyn who said, I'm calling you from the B41 bus. And he wanted to talk about buses as one, you know, underutilized method of breaking car culture in New York. So you are Alan from Brooklyn. Hi, Alan.
Yes, I am. And I have called from a bus before, but that was last year. I was to make a point separate from that. When the wonderful high school student over there was talking about what are we studying for in school if we're facing limits on our expectations of the future, there's an inscription on the entrance to the NYU Law School that I recall from a number of years ago. I think it's from Emerson, and it says something like, to what avail the plow or sail or land or life if freedom fail? You could flip that around. To what avail all of these freedoms if the physical world in which to enjoy them is failing? To what avail freedom if land or life fail? So that's pretty much a paraphrase of what you said, and I really salute the work of all you young people. We should have been doing this decades ago.
Thank you.
Alan, thank you. Jade, what's happening at your school tomorrow, the High School for American Studies in the Bronx?
At 10:30, everyone will walk out and go take the B train down to Foley Square to meet. I think that we all have what you said in mind. And to go back to your question, definitely for the strike, one of our demands, in fact, the first one, is no more fossil fuels. We want an end to all carbon emissions, of course, but we have to be cognizant of the political climate that we live in, and we don't want to endorse any one way to get there because that hasn't worked so far. So what we're hoping to do is open the conversation to basically everyone in the United States, and hopefully we want a bipartisan solution here. We're not on any one side of the aisle. Well, we have to think of this as a global issue that affects everyone and that everyone can have a stake in changing.
Clarissa Diaz from Gothamist, I see that in addition to the graphic story you have about plastics on Gothamist now, you had a wonderful story the other day from Long Island about how the Shinnecock Nation there is using nature to adapt to sea level rise. So Tell everybody, where on Long Island do the Shinnecock live and what's happening there?
So they live on a kind of peninsula jutting off of the town of Southampton. There's about 700 members living there. They have been, basically, the sea level rise is happening, and there's a 100% chance, according to analysis by Climate Central, that they will see a 4-foot surge from a storm, which will pretty much inundate a lot of the island. The piece was kind of to bring awareness to this issue so that, you know, they can receive help and funding to try and restore their coastline. And the methods that they have been using to kind of prolong, kind of the short-term methods that you can do for climate adaptation is kind of restoring and regenerating marshland and the shore around the reservation that faces Shinnecock Bay. That kind of can buy time. You can even buy a 20 to 30 year time window while you try to figure out a long-term plan for managed retreat. So this is, I think, going to become a bigger issue as sea level rises, is what are all of these coastal communities going to do? Where is the support for these communities that are very vulnerable to climate change?
Do you think, and I don't know if you know, are enough of an expert on the topic to have an opinion about this, but do you know if the Shinnecock, that model that they're using that you just described, mm-hmm. or if they make a claim that there's a lesson there for other places, like I'm thinking about the segment we did this week on the controversy over East River Park mm-hmm. on the Lower East Side, where they want to raise it, I think it's 9 feet, because of future projected storm surges after we had Sandy and everything. And it's really controversial how to do that, and people don't want their open space taken away, and you know, questions about how to do it, all of that. So I wonder if there are lessons from that natural approach that the Shinnecock is using for a much more populated area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's an interesting thought. And I think there's just like a lot of social and emotional issues that, you know, we tend to talk a lot about the scientific and kind of the policy issues, which is good, but that also needs to be integrated with the social and economic issues happening within the community as well. So,
all right, we have got, I think, lined up on the phones 4 more students who are going to be taking place in the school climate strike tomorrow. So let's hear from each of them briefly. I think we're going to pull this off. I think the first one is Azalea Danes. Azalea, are you there? Do we have you?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi, Brian.
Hey there. Thanks for giving us a minute. Where do you go to school and what are you going to do tomorrow?
I go to the Bronx High School of Science, and I'm actually one of the organizers, along with Jade. Hi, Jade. For the climate strike. So
wait, you're supposed to be arch enemies. Bronx Science and Lehman American Studies are right across the park. You're supposed to hate each other.
That's true. I mean, we do. When you enter one school, they tell you, you know, the most important thing is that we beat the school down the block.
There you go. Yeah. When it comes to sports, right?
Yeah.
So, Azalea, what's one climate fact that you're focused on? Anything come to mind that you feel really strongly about or kind of jumps out at you?
Well, I mean, to speak to Greta's messaging of Unite Behind the Science, what I say often is that 97% of scientists, according to NASA, agree that climate change is happening right now and that it's a human-caused issue. I think that just speaks true to the fact that every single elected official, corporation, adult on this planet needs to unite behind the science and listen to the science, as Vic was saying earlier.
Azalea, thanks so much. Good luck tomorrow. Let's try another student. I think we have Anaya Thomas on the line. Anaya, are you there?
Yes, hi.
Hi there.
It's Anaya,
I apologize. Where do you go to school and what are you going to do tomorrow?
I go to school in Bergen County, New Jersey, and tomorrow I'm going to go to the New York Climate Strikes. I work with Zero Hour, which is another one of like the major organizers for some of the strikes in D.C. and North Carolina, as well as New York.
Are you going to have a group coming in from there? Because unlike Jade, you can't just get on the B train to go down to Foley Square.
Well, I'm probably just going to take the bus down over there.
Uh-huh. Is there a bus from Bergen County that people are organizing, or not really? You're just going to take it into Port Authority, the regular public bus, right?
Yeah.
All right. What's one thing about the climate crisis that really stands out to you that you find yourself thinking about?
One of the biggest aspects that I've been thinking about a lot lately. I was in D.C. with Greta and Vic, and it just keeps hitting me over and over that like the climate crisis is so important to listen to science, but it's also really important to listen to the stories and like the experiences that people have, and really focus on climate justice as well as the actual physical scientific aspects of climate change, because people are being affected in different ways, and we have to take that into account so we have a just transition.
I'm glad you brought that
renewable
up.
Energy sources.
Thank you for promoting our next segment, which is going to be with climate justice leaders, in particular from New York and New Jersey. So, Anaya, good luck coming in tomorrow, and thanks a lot for giving us a minute. Next, Zoe Inbar. Zoe, are you there? Do we have you?
Yes, hi, I'm here.
And actually, can we put Zoe and Soren on together? Because I think they go to the same school. Yes, yeah, so Zoe Inbar and Soren Shapiro from Brooklyn Prospect. Is that the name of the school?
Yes, Brooklyn Prospect Charter School.
Soren, you there too?
Soren?
Oh, you're sharing Soren. A phone. I get it. Okay, we'll do you one at a time then.
Okay.
Zoe, tell us about the environmentalism club that I see you're in at the school and what you're going to do tomorrow.
Well, at the school, we're organizing some of the first environmental club because we haven't had much of that here, and we're getting a big group of students to come to the strike and start at Foley Square, go to Battery Park, all that.
Uh-huh. Can you put Soren on? Can I talk to Soren? Is Soren home? Soren, you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Hey there. What grade are you? What grade are you in?
I'm also a senior.
Cool. And what are you going to be doing tomorrow?
I'm also helping to lead the strike, so we're giving directions to Foley Square and handing out permission slips to go and get out of class. And we're making posters tomorrow morning for the strike as well.
Do you have any cool sort of graphics or slogans or anything for your posters? If you don't
nothing
know.
Like that cool. Mine has changed the politics, not the climate. Pretty good.
Pretty good. It's straightforward, you know.
Yeah.
It may not win the sort of political cartoon award, but it gets the message out there. All right, Zoe and Soren, thanks for giving us a few minutes. We're almost out of time for this segment. Let me go around the horn on the green space stage one more time. Clarissa Diaz, for you, from Gothamist. There was a fact in your piece that a lot of people probably don't know, that the fossil fuels industry, as coal plants are being shut down, sees plastic production as a growth area. So what's the relationship between companies we think of as producing energy, heat, fuel, things like that, and the production of bottles and other packaging?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that came from my interview with Judith, who was a regional administrator for the EPA. And basically, if you think about like what is plastic made out of? Traditionally, plastic is made out of chemicals and oil. So if you think about petrochemicals and those industries that are working in oil and fossil fuels. And as kind of coal industry and plants are being kind of shut down, what else can you make with ethane, which is a byproduct of hydrofracking? And that is going to be able to reduce even more plastic, even cheaper than it is today. So as there might be, as like the market is shifting to kind of more renewable energy, the marketing of it could change. And according to Judith, this could create more plastic. So.
And Vic and Jade, I'm curious to get you for a second on sort of an optimism scale. Where would you put yourself, Vicky, as a 20-year-old, on a 1 to 100 scale, let's say, of optimism for your own future personally and for the world?
Yeah, on a 1 to what scale?
1 to 100, or you can make up your own. I don't care, really.
Yeah, I would say that being a youth climate activist right now like has to be characterized by optimism, for sure. I mean, it's not like this is always easy or fun or glamorous at all, but it's worth it because we can't just sit back. And like Jamie said, Jamie Marlin, the founder of Zero Hour, who was on the testimony with me and Greta yesterday, she said at one point, do you want to be able to look in your children's eyes and say that you did absolutely everything you could to protect them? And I think that's the scale that a lot of youth activists are working with. We're not looking at just optimism or negativity, we're just trying to be real at this point to make sure that we can even have a future.
Jade, same question.
I would say I'm at an 100.
100?
Yeah, I didn't imagine that I would be involved with this movement. I didn't imagine I would be on this show like 2 months ago. I wasn't involved with Fridays for Future at all. But now I'm here, and I don't see any bigger priority in my life than tackling this crisis. And when I go to these planning meetings and I sit with the other organizers to talk about what we're doing on Friday and just the crisis in general, we are all on that same page. And I think that there is this unity where even if you don't know these people, you're all here together to fight one common cause. That's so much more powerful than I think anything that I've ever witnessed before, and I don't imagine that you could ignore such a big group of people like that.
And that applause line is going to be the last word, except, do you know about the Fridays for Future theme song submission thing that's going on the Fridays for Future website?
We do have an official strike song, if that's what you're talking about.
Well, I saw that there's an invitation, and I'm going to play what's on there by a young songwriter from Europe. And I think there's an invitation for other people to submit possible songs. So we're going to hear one example as we go out with music. But please thank Jade and Vic and Clarissa.
Set together here, we got a method here. We talking peer to peer. My earth is here to stay.